Okay, we know now that a program is the thing that makes a computer useful. We know that the computer is simply the engine that provides the information for the program to work on, and it provides a way the program can display the output in some way that the user would find useful. And we've looked at cars and colored lights and the smartphone, which is the most interesting thing in my opinion. Now we're going to look at a useful program. Now, in the old days, before cell phone or BC if you like, if you went to Venice or you're planning a trip abroad to any city in the world, you'd have to prepare before you went. You need to read guidebooks, find maps, get the local paper when you arrived, and read through a language that you probably didn't understand very well to try and make sense of what was happening and where were the good places to go that week. When are they going to have the Festival of Colour Boats, which I seem to have seen when I went, which was rather nice. In those days, it was all down to legwork and brain work, and you'd probably miss out. If you didn't get the paper, you might find there's a great big festival next door to your hotel, didn't know about it because, hey, I can't read Italian very well, so fine. That kind of thing nowadays doesn't happen, because nowadays your smartphone can act as your tour guide. You don't actually have to do anything other than use your phone to help you do things. My City, Venice. Now, My City is an application. It's a program for the phone. You would find it useful if you ever went to Venice. If you don't ever go to Venice, but you want other people who visit your hometown to want to know where all the hotspots are, all the good places, all the things that are going on, you could take the My City application and do what someone did to make the Venice one, which is modify it. As you can see here, the My City application has a whole bunch of museums, the Doge's Palace, the Correa Museum, blah, blah, blah. Those have all been fed into the system as data. There's that word again. And the program is taking that data from the tables on the internet, formatting it, and then showing it to us in a way that's useful to us. Now, this application brings together all kinds of data, mapping, news feeds, and just straight tables of information, and provides like a one-stop shop that you could use if you go to Venice and want to find out where things are. So it's just basically a program whose job is to give you a good time should you ever go to Venice. In fact, let's take a look at it. Now, there's one thing that computers are very good at. It is pretending to be other computers. This kind of sounds a little bit weird, but if you look on the screen now, you can see exactly what I mean. This presentation has been recorded on a PC, that's fine, it's working very nicely, but inside the PC I now have a Windows phone, and if I start to move around here using the mouse, I can actually treat it, well done Pete, nice job by the way, it was created by Pete, I can treat my computer screen as a phone, and sitting inside the memory of the computer behind the scenes is a program taking data in, producing outputs, that thinks it's inside a phone. We know different because the application is actually running inside another computer. But you'll see this when you get into computers, you'll find that one of the things a computer will do better than just about anything else is pretend to be another one. And so I'm able to show you what the phone program will look like without actually having a phone in my hands. And again, this is extremely interesting. If you want to write software for a particular device, the way the world works these days, you don't need the device at all. And so this is the first level of what we call emulation. We'll see some other levels as we delve deeper into the way that programs work and how we make them go a little bit later. But this is the Venice app, and it's kind of making me think I should go back to Venice just so I can play with the program in its most useful context. It tells me about museums. It tells me about the Doge's Palace. It gives me some nice picture of the artwork. It's properly useful. If I hit this button here, it says, yeah, I'll let the maps work. It says, okay, I'll find you on the map and I'll show you where you are. And so it'll eventually, in a few seconds, it'll fill it. There we go. It's found out where the museum is. It's shown me. Now, you'll look at that and you'll go, ah, yeah, my phone will do that. And that's absolutely fine. And it will. And good luck to you. But how would you go about making your phone do that? How hard was it for the programmer to produce an application that actually took that click on the screen and figured out that what Robert wants to do is see the location of that museum in Venice? Turns out to be very easy. Everything you're seeing on the screen is backed by a particular type of reusable component. And we're going back to Lego at this point. in that our program can be made up of little blocks that we can fit together and run in the context which is useful to you. I could make a London app. I could change the data behind the program with a picture of the post office tower or telecom tower, Big Ben, the Houses of Parliament, the Albert Hall and whatnot. And I could give the user exactly the same experience, but when they click the button, it shows them that location in the world. If I go back, then the program says, okay, he wants to go back to where he was. That's a good way to move. I can go back again and I can flip through to different pages. These are pictures of the area, which are a good way of getting your head around what the place looks like. And then here we've got another interesting component. This is live data. This is not stored on a server in a file that we go and open and look at. Maps, they're held in files that are fairly static, but we update them from time to time. This has come from a whole bunch of what are called feeds. And the feed is basically a bunch of data which is updated regularly as new content arrives, and we just pull it down. You will have used these hundreds and hundreds of times. Lots of applications use them. But the idea is that the app can then bring the data in, pull the pictures out, put them in a nice arrangement on the screen and show me stuff. And again, I can customize my app, I can point it at different feeds, and I can find information about London, upcoming events. That's just another feed, and so we go. And then we're back with Pete again. So this is the kind of app that you would download when you're going to Venice. Maybe you'd like it, maybe you'd tell your friends, maybe they get it too. If it was a paying one, you might not worry about parting with a buck for a thing which will save you an awful lot of legwork and work when you get there. And so maybe the person writing this, maybe Pete, could think in terms of making a ton of cash from actually building it. That's fine. That's what you should be thinking about. That's what you should be doing. You should be going, there's this thing I've got. I've got my big collection of, I don't know, jam jars. And I want to figure out a way of actually keeping them in a good organization and making other people aware, other jam jar collectors, maybe a bad example, but I'm going to keep going with this, out there in the world who want to buy my and trade my jam jars. So maybe there's an app. And the great thing is, if you've got 10, 20, 30 million people using the platform, if you've got all these people walking around with that app, if only 0.1% of those folks are jam jar collectors, that means you have a market, a potential market of thousands of people. So the great thing about this is it sort of gives you a tool that you can use to make niche products, and it gives you a huge market in which some people must actually be interested in that kind of thing. So that's the application, and you're looking at that and thinking, yeah, that's okay, I could use that, that will work for me. If there's one from my hometown, I'd tell my friends who visit to get it and take a look. I'd probably even I'd find a way of putting things in there that are useful to them, like they could call home and whatnot. If we look at the actual application, we'll find that it's been customized to do that kind of thing as well, as far as I recall. Here you go, email Jane. That's nothing to do with Venice. That's because Pete, who wrote this thing, had a friend called Jane, and he wanted a fast way of sending her an email. I can't do it on my emulation because this is a pretend phone, remember? This is just my computer pretending to be a phone. This is the point at which the emulation breaks, because the pretend phones don't do email in the same way as real ones, because they haven't got the same connectivity. But I think you get the drift. This is basically my app, which means that if you want to have your app which just tells you how to do your stuff and links and brings all your stuff together, that's another way that you could actually do that, and another use for this kind of technology. So that's My City Venice as a program. What we're going to do now is look at how on earth you make that. However, before we go ahead and make something, I want to take a little tiny digression into the business of specification. Now, the people that made My City, which we've got Venice as an example of, thought very hard about the things travellers might want to do. Find a place to stay, find your way around, know what's happening, maybe police station, doctor, hospital, and they also want an easy way to contact the folks back home, in this case Jane. And they built their application based on the conclusions of things they thought were important, and in this case it does the job pretty well. and as we'll see a bit later, it's actually really easy to take what it does and add bits to it to make the user even happier. And that's fine. They had the idea, they had the vision, they filled in the deliverables, and then they went ahead and made it. That's terrific. Now, what we're going to do now is take a little look at some application anatomy. We're going to have a look at what happens inside the computer. We're going to take the Venice application to bits and find out how it was built. And this will also show how we can make our own programs. So we're going to learn how it is a bit like anatomy, where you find out how things work by taking them to bits. We're going to do that. We're going to dismantle the thing and take a look inside and figure out that, yes, if we take these bits and repurpose them, we can be in business. Now, another important point that I really want you to take away from this part of the session: software developers use a lot of tools to do their jobs, and the tools themselves are programs. So that means that you write a piece of machinery, a piece of software that takes data in, does something with it, and produces data out. What goes in is what I want it to do, and what comes out is a program that does that. Now, this is nothing new. We've been making tools for ourselves to make our lives easier since the beginning of time. And some of our tools, lathes, drills, glue, whatnot, these are used to make other tools. The same thing happens in software. You have a tool that writes programs for you. That's kind of what we're looking at next, because we're going to look at the actual tool that was used to produce the Venice app. We've seen how the MyCity Venice application works. We've seen how to move around it. We've seen the different sections and how you can get data out of the program and interact with it. What I want to do now is take a look at how that application was actually created, and more to the point, how you could use the tool I'm going to tell you about to make applications of your own. I'm in the projects area for my part of the App Studio system, and you can see I've made one or two projects already. One that helps me use the phone in the car, one that has a bunch of web links that I like to use, and one called Cheeselander, where you land a piece of cheese on some bread. No, seriously. What I want to do though is take a look at this button here, which is the Start New Project button. We're going to start off and make a new MyCity application, and I'll show you how in a web environment you can actually start writing professional looking programs. Again, bear in mind this is just a bog standard browser. This is the kind of place you would go to visit Facebook, send email, use Office Online, all kinds of things like that. So there's nothing special going on here. If I hit Start New Project, the first thing which happens is that I get to choose the template that I want to work with. Now, if we want to start with a brand new, completely empty application, you can do just that. But there's also some templates you might find useful, where you can make, say, a fan page for your band, a movie review site, a commercial site, and so on. And if you scroll further down, you'll find the remarkably familiar looking MyCity template. Let's click that and see what happens. The system's now going to say, okay, do you want to make one of these? And the clever thing about App Studio, and we'll cover this a little bit later, is it's actually letting you build programs for both versions of a platform. Not just a phone application, but a Windows 8 PC application as well. And if I hit Create, what'll happen is the system will actually allow me to build versions of the program for both these platforms. We'll see how that works in a minute or two. Let's just hit Create and see what happens. Okay, the system's now gone off and it's made me the empty Venice application. I say empty, it's full of Venice stuff, but you could change it to be any other city in the world that you might like, including, of course, your hometown. And the interesting thing here is that I have an environment on the left which is exactly the same as the program looks. Now, remember when I was talking about emulation and I was saying that one thing a computer is very good at is pretending to be another computer. This is another example of the same thing happening. The servers behind my web page are taking my commands from the mouse, and they're using those to drive an emulation of the environment the program runs. So I can do all the actions, I can see what it looks like. I'm not using a Windows phone. I might even not be using this computer. This might be happening on a computer in the cloud somewhere, but it provides me with an environment I can use to both sort of view what the program will look like and also play with the actual program itself and change the design. So if I go to the About the Author page, okay, if we click the Edit button here, then what happens now is I'm taken to the actual page which contains the information about the author. And there's Pete. Good old Pete. Did a very good job, did Pete? So, if you look at this, you'll see two things. You'll see a Pages tab and a Data tab. Okay, so what's happening here? Well, this is actually structured as a web page. So what we have here is what's called HTML, or Hypertext Markup Language. You've probably seen this before. Every time you visit a web page, the system which tells your computer browser what goes where on the screen is called HTML. This positions the text, it makes it bold, it makes it bullet points, it lets you put pictures in. It's how we design information to be presented over the web by a browser. And you can see that we've got two tabs here, and we've got a thing called Layout and Bindings, which looks a bit weird, and we've got a thing called Data. Leave the bindings for now, click the Data button and take a look, and oh look, there's Pete. Okay, so I could say, let's say that we get Trevor in to help on the program, and he wants some credit. So I go and Trevor, and I can't type today, and that there shouldn't be bold, that should be little, so I'll just click that and make it go. Now that's all fine and dandy, and so if you wanted to put a static page into your application, you would just keep on doing it like this. At the moment, nothing much seems to have happened in my program, but that's because I haven't hit save yet. If I hit save, then oh look, Pete and Trevor are now the authors of the application. And so you can see here that if I wanted to build a set of static pages, I could use this system to do that very easily. In terms of data processing, what's happening is the computer program will run inside my phone, fetch the pages from the data store, and then present them in front of me to take a look at. And if I click back on here, we can start looking at what this binding thing means. Okay. Binding's a really important thing, and it sounds extremely complicated, but actually it isn't. Effectively what's happening is there's a mapping between a placeholder in your page and the stuff you've actually written. The stuff that's actually being placed is on the page in the content area. And this is a really, really simple binding, because there's nothing nothing interesting. We have one place on the page, we want stuff, and we put the content there. And the way this works is we just have the content in one area and the pages in the other. But I think you're getting the idea now, at least I hope you are, that if you change the content of this part of the application, it actually changes the content of the program as it runs, and we can see this in the emulation. So let's keep going. Let's go and have a look at something a little bit more interesting. Let's go back and have a look at the museums page. Now you can see it in front of you. This is how it looks. And this is the point at which the binding starts to get a little bit more interesting, because I've got more than one thing to bind now. I have the title, which is the actual name of the museum. I have the subtitle, which is in the case of the Doge's Palace, it's the Doge residence and seat of Venetian government. And so whenever you structure data for computer presentation, if you like, what you find is that you've got different elements you want to map onto different parts of the page. And so what this is saying is, on this page I want to have the title of the museum information, the subtitle, which is a bit more, and the image, which is the picture of the museum. Now, once you've got your bindings, once you've got your data tagged like this, you can then start getting clever with layout. At the moment, take a look here, I've got a layout tab which is saying I want a picture and then some text alongside it. If I click here, watch what happens to that. I'll do that again because it happened rather quickly. If I click here, try a different one, the layout changes. Now, the way that's been made to work is actually kind of clever, because what's happening is that it's actually saying, okay, I know I have to have a picture, I know I have to have a title, and I know I have to have a subtitle. So these different mappings provide different ways we can take that information and present it. So the layout layer is taking the information we want to show the user, and it's actually mapping that onto particular parts of the screen. Now, there's nothing particularly magical about this. Every time you fill the form in, you've done something very similar. The form actually maps whereabouts on the page things need to go, and you fill the bits in. If the form design changes, you know to put your name at the top left rather than the top right, or whatever. Exactly the same thing is happening here. Something behind the scenes, and what that something is we'll come to in a minute or two, is actually taking this content information and mapping it onto how it should appear on the screen. This is my personal favorite. I like this particular layout, so I'm going to leave it like that, and I'm going to hit save, and that will actually save this particular layout. What I'll also do now, though, because we're getting our head around this kind of how this works, we have this idea that we've got things in the data, title, subtitle and image. We've got designs of the page which have been created for us as kind of like preset templates, and we've got a way in which we can map one onto the other. So let's have a look at where the actual data comes from. So we go into here, and oh look, we actually have a whole bunch of columns, each of which has a name that matches some parts that appear on the screen and some parts that don't. So I've got a title, a subtitle, a web address for the actual image of the museum, a description, an address and a phone number. Okay, and if I want to, I can go in here and hit edit, and I can change any of these things I want. So if I go into here, I can go into here and I can say the Doge's residence, blah, 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 and seat of Venetian government. I can now put nice in summer if we like. Let's just change that, nice in summer. Okay, so I've changed one of the elements of information about the Doge's palace, and so now if I go back here, we can see that nice in is kind of appearing. It's been a bit cut off, but I could fix that layout by changing to a different template. If I now go back here, let's do all that, shall we? Let's go into there and change the template so we can see nice in summer kind of appearing. If I decide I want to put the phone number on rather than the actual image URL, rather than the subtitle, I can go in here, I can change to phone, and so now I'm changing the bindings of my data so that different things appear on the screen. Now this is great fun, and it might even be useful. Who knows? I'd rather have the subtitle actually, so I think I'll put that back to how it was, and again it changes. But can you see now that you now have a great big sort of like train set you can play with, where you can put data into tables, you can fiddle with it, and you've got a lot of control over how it looks. And what's happening is we've introduced this layer between the data, the stuff that we want the users to actually see, and the presentation, which provides this binding. So we say, okay, we've got three things, title, subtitle and image. I can pick those from the data and I can map them onto there. Computers are really good at this kind of thing. Mapping data from one place to another is the kind of thing which they do really, really well. And so what we're doing here is effectively using that power to make it really easy for us to produce mix and match configurations which can then be used to make an application specific and carefully customized. If I go for one of these templates, then all I will see is the pictures, because that's all they have, just the image URL. So if you wanted to have like a tile where I can touch on one of these pictures to get into the description of the museum, then fine, do that. There's even a rather rather neat sort of picture thing there. In fact, we runs out of pictures, we've only got four. So we can effectively change the way the thing appears by using this rather nice mapping. So you can move the pages around, you can make changes, you can add RSS feeds, you can add Bing searches, you can add pictures, and all these things are templates, pre-formatted pages that you can plug in to get the application that you want. Data in, data out. These are the designs. They take the data and present it to the user. When I've finished making my application, when I've got the design just how I like, I hit the button mark finish. That's a good name, that. And at this point, we're actually looking at our application, how it looks. And so what I can do now is hit the big green button which says generate. Now what's going to happen now is the system will say, what kind of program do you want to generate? Do you want to make a program which is good for Windows Phone and Windows 8, or just Windows Phone? Of the two, I kind of like this one. Now, these buttons here let you into a way in which you can take your application and think in terms of actually selling it to other people, putting it into the marketplace and making it available for anybody in the world to download and possibly buy. You can also make a version which can be installed on people's phones that you can send them. I'm going to leave those two boxes clear at the moment. I can put a comment in here if I like, but I'm not going to do that just right now. I'll just hit generate. And so there's a whole bunch of stuff going on behind the scenes. You can see the progress bar climbing up. It's finished that remarkably quick. If we go down here, at this point, you could actually deploy the program onto your Windows phone or your Windows desktop. And there are ways you can do that that I'll leave you to find out. There's some very good videos out there for you to take a look at, which we'll have in the reference stages at the end of this presentation. But for now, I'm going to do this thing here. I'm going to hit the download button. I'm going to actually hit this button here. Now it's giving me some chapter and verse about which particular Visual Studio program I'll need to actually investigate this code. That's absolutely fine. We'll come to that in the next demonstration. I'm going to hit OK, and the system will then go, let's go download. There's now a rattling noise. I'm going to call it app.zip. That's fine. And then down we go. It's a little small program. It'll get put onto your machine, and in the next section, we'll take a look at exactly what happens behind the scenes inside that. But the thing I really hope you take away from this is the fact that I've been on a website. I've just played around. And what I've done is I've actually discovered how easy it is to make an application, which is, in this case, about Venice. But if I wanted to, yeah, catalog my jam jar collection and make a program that just did that for me, it would be quite easy to do this. I can put pictures into the system so that it can actually, I could have all my friends on there. I could make a database of all my class at school. Okay, that's App Studio. Next stop is to take a look at what happens inside the application that we've generated. Okay. So we've seen how you can actually take a design of an application and use Application Studio to actually realize that. We saw that you could actually design elements on pages, map them using these binding things to particular parts of the screen, and then press a button, and at the end a complete application will be generated. We've also seen that we have an emulation, because computers are very good at pretending to be other computers, which allows us to actually decide what the program will look like. In terms of how our application is created, we design it in a series of pages, and on those pages we then have layouts that map the data which we've actually got in our table somewhere onto the screen using this technique called binding. Binding's where you take an item and you say, okay, this item goes here, this item goes here, this item goes here, and so on. Computers take your bindings, your designs behind the scenes, and they make an application out of your designs. If you think about what's happening here, it's a standard computer data processing situation. Information's going in, the computer's doing something with it, and other information is coming out. Computers are very good at writing programs in this way, taking data, manipulating it, and then producing an output. If you think about it, what's actually happening is that the design is broken down into three different things. The raw data, the information about the Doge's palace, where its address, its description, its phone number, the page layouts, that's this binding, this mapping between those elements of the data and where they go on the screen. And finally, we have the instructions, and these are the things which actually take the data and visually do the action to present that data on the screen, to actually make the individual pixels light up, if you like. As we'll see a little bit later, we'll break our program development down into those three chunks when we look at the raw code. The great thing about App Studio is that it's a tool which lets you be creative and write programs when you've never really seen a line of code. They're a great way to get started. There's lots and lots of them out there. They're well worth taking a look at, and you can also use them, and this is extremely important, to get the experience of finding out what customers want and then building a solution that actually solves that problem. I've said before, this is a really important part of the skill set for a really great programmer. And so if you want to actually go down that line, then you could ask your customer, say your mum or whatever, what would you want in a recipe management program? Write it all down, go to App Studio, build it, show it to the customer, get their feedback, and incorporate that into your new design. Get skill doing that, and your path to greatness is actually quite a nice looking one. So that's effectively where we go with App Studio. And now it's time for another question break, after which I'll be right back.